from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning...
Cabrera takes strike three called, and the Giants have won the World Series in Detroit. And the celebration begins as the Giants mob the mound. Cabrera strikes out, lucky to end it.
Last night, the San Francisco Giants won the World Series, the second in 3 years in a four-game sweep of the American League pennant-winning Detroit Tigers, and we'll discuss the series and get your responses and reactions as the Bay Area and Giants fans everywhere celebrate. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Last night, in a game that went into extra innings, the National League pennant-winning San Francisco Giants defeated the American League champions, the Detroit Tigers, 4-3 behind the pitching of Matt Cain in what has come to be called the bullpen by committee, with Sergio Romo once again closing the game after a game-winning clutch hit by second baseman Marcos Scudero. In this morning's opening Forum Hour, we discuss the four-game sweep by the Giants, the 2012 world champions of Major League Baseball. And joining us in studio is Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host for KNBR 680. Welcome, Marty.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you. And we have a couple of sports writers joining us from Detroit. Mark Purdy, sports columnist with the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. Worked at the Mercury News since 1984 and is in Detroit. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. I'm glad I don't have to go out on the lake, Great Lakes today. I think all the freighters are getting blown away.
Yeah. I'm also glad we have you on here. You remember last time when you said, I think Detroit's going to win, and I said, you're not going to necessarily be welcome on the show, Mark, but just think how gracious I am.
I was wrong.
Well, you and most sports writers, we'll talk about that. Bruce Jenkins, of course, veteran sports columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, also with us from the Motor City. Bruce, good to have you.
Oh, very good. Thanks. How are you doing out there?
We're doing okay. We're exulting, and there's a lot of feverish happiness in the air, as you might imagine. And I'm going to start off talking to my friend Marty Lurie here just about, you know, Pablo Sandoval said it best, I guess, and it's been said over and over again, maybe a cliche already, but precisely the point, this was such a magical team effort that you wonder who should have been the most valuable player.
Well, you could have picked about eight people for this World Series, but Sandoval really was the MVP, and he just noses out Barry Zito for me, believe it or not. But what Sandoval did in Game 1 off the great Justin Verlander to hit the home run to get the Giants on the board, to realize Verlander was not Christy Mathewson, so to speak, coming out there. And it just set the tone for the World Series. So for me, Sandoval, the three home runs in that game and joining the great Babe Ruth
And hitting 500.
And Reggie Jackson and Albert Pujols. And hitting 500, and maybe his most important contribution was giving Scudero protection. Yesterday in the 10th inning, Jim Leland could have put Scudero on base and had Sandoval hit right-handed against Phil Koch. He didn't do that. He pitched to Scudero because Sandoval was coming up next. He got the ultimate respect, and all of a sudden Scudero, who I've seen do it a million times, he's the best clutch hitter around, came through with the big hit.
Well, those two Venezuelans seem to help each other a good deal. I mean, Scudero really helped Sandoval kind of find his swing and not necessarily go for the bad pitches as he's been going. But you've been saying earlier that this is a mosaic. I mean, it's a metaphor for you of a mosaic.
Well, it is. That's what the baseball season is. When we start, Michael, it's that new book. It's going to be a great book. It's a bestseller. Every day you read another chapter, you do not know where it's going to go. You have no idea where it's going to end, and you get that story every single day. And until last night, we didn't know the final page. We kind of guessed where it was going to go, but you didn't know it. That's the baseball season. It's that blank page. It's the mosaic. And I always say the tiles are on the side. And as each day goes on, you fit them onto the page. And when the season is over, when it works, you have the most beautiful picture in the world. And that last piece of the puzzle for me was Barry Zito. When he fit into that mosaic, this ball club continued on against St. Louis, and his win against Verlander in Game 1 I thought was huge for this ball club.
Well, people also love those kind of stories. I mean, Zito coming back the way he did after being so highly paid, and there was a lot of animus toward him because of his high pay because he wasn't performing. But I think there's also, and I wonder your take on this because you have one of the best historical baseball memories around. You know, it's not that long ago we were talking about Giants going to St. Petersburg.
Well, absolutely. There's that picture of Brandon Crawford, you know, that was in the newspaper at 5 years old saying, please, Mr. White, don't take the team to Florida. But that's the way baseball works. It's so funny, the cycles of the game of baseball. You look back to the Giants and all the times they've been in the World Series, and they beat your Cleveland Indians in 1954, and they swept them, and then didn't get back to the World Series for 56 years? Well, 62 they did, but didn't win a World Series since 1954. And then here they win 2 and 3 years. It's the cycles of baseball, and it's the most beautiful part of the game. Be patient. Things will work out.
Well, it's now the dominant franchise, or so it might seem, Mark Purdy. It might be a little premature, but I noticed Ray Ratto talking about this being the new platinum standard of modern baseball in a column that Ray did. And also, I read your column and was struck by baseball memory of the fact that the second and third games of this World Series series were both shutouts. We hadn't had anything like that since the Black Sox, and that maybe makes it the first of all time.
Well, what does Ratto know? Ratto doesn't know anything. just joking.
Well, what were the Vegas? No, I mean, you were with the Tigers. What were the Vegas odds against the Giants on this game?
Ray makes a point. You know, like the way the Giants have constructed this team is, you know, once they figured out, once the Barry Bonds left, and they figured their team had to be pitching and defense, Brian Sabian and the whole organization worked to get the team on the field that you saw last night. And really, you know, the one in 2010, all different position players except for Posey generally. Sandoval played a little in that series. But it's constructed around pitching and getting good defense up the middle, of course. And that's what it worked. And, yeah, that it is interesting when you – one of the things about baseball is that it does have this – it's our oldest professional sport in America. So you can go back and find out really interesting, remarkable things. And, yes, I mean, the biggest game of this series, it seems crazy to talk about a sweep as having any big game. But that first game when they beat Justin Verlander. But then those second and third games, I think the Tigers kept, thinking, well, we'll just get the hits eventually. But the Giants shut them out in the second and third games, and no National League team had done that since the 1919 Reds did it to the White Sox, who, of course, weren't trying to hit. They were trying to throw the series. And, so this was maybe that second and third game might have been the two best pitched World Series games by a National League staff ever, because the Tigers hitters, so far as we know, were trying.
We should also mention this is the third time a National League in 3 years team has won in terms of the World Series. And Marty informed me by writing it down that the odds were 8.5 to 5 against the Giants going into this series. I wonder, in fact, you mentioned Jim Leland and what a class act he was in all this, you know, saying they were just a better team and not making any excuses and so forth. But as we look at the season and the Giants being almost a totally different franchise than they were a couple of years ago when they won, with the exception of Posey and a few others, this is a team that makes you think that maybe Bill Bochy is the real genius. I mean, Bruce Bochy. Okay. Bill Walsh was called the genius for so long, but maybe it's time for Bochy, huh?
Well, Bochy, Michael, is now in the class, as Bruce Jenkins wrote beautifully this morning. He is now in the Hall of Fame discussion as a manager. And it's a tough one because in his era, he's got to deal with Tony La Russa and Joe Torre and Bobby Cox. And now Bruce Bochy is in that discussion. And he handles men beautifully, and he put this team together beautifully. But every decision he made seemed to work out. And as Bruce wrote, and Bruce will tell us this morning, Bochy manages the game. The other people watch the game. And he's on every move. And you just look at him in the dugout and to put Lincecum in the position he did. But he gets people to play for him. And Ryan Theriault was a good example. He lost his job to Scudero. And still, he sweated it out, whether he'd be on the roster or not. Bochy put him on the roster, and he got the biggest hit of the World Series for the ball club.
We can't really separate Bochy from this team's success, obviously, Bruce Jenkins, and I'd like your take on that. But also, how much of a role, in your judgment, does Hunter Pence play, particularly with all those sunflower seeds and all that cheerleading? I mean, his bat was kind of cold, really.
Yeah, it doesn't happen without the sunflower seeds. Pence is a guy of just fierce desire. I mean, you can tell just anything he does, riding to the ballpark on a scooter or swinging the bat in the on-deck circle. He's incredibly energetic. He's a far better player, really, than what we saw in terms of raw production. But he brings an incredible energy to the team. And, you know, in Cincinnati, when they were at their lowest point, having lost the first two games and just about to fade out for the winter, he took it upon himself to get the team together and deliver this sort of Newt Rockne, you know, fiery speech, and the guys came storming out of the clubhouse like a bunch of, offensive tackles and linebackers. And it sounds just corny, you know, and it is, but the players talked about it after the game. I mean, nobody really knew it happened, but it was so powerful that, you know, you start hearing little slivers of conversation about what Pence had done. And, of course, when we went to Pence, he said, nothing happened. I did nothing. You know, he didn't even want to hear about it, but it was a big thing. And he did deliver some really key hits, and he's a guy that, you know, the numbers tell you only a certain amount about what's inside that guy's heart, and he was huge, I thought, to their winning in his way.
How much did the fans play a role in this, since the first two games were at home, Bruce?
Well, I mean, that goes back and forth. I mean, they opened at home against Cincinnati and could not have looked any worse. I mean,
right.
The crowd was driven to complete silence, and it looked for all the world like the team was done, and there was no reason to really believe in them at that point. But, you know, the larger picture is that, in fact, Brandon Crawford said that when they went on the road and did all these great things, that they're used to playing in front of big, noisy crowds because every night is sold out, that they don't understand the desolation of the Oakland Coliseum when the A's play there, or most teams. Even the Yankees had thousands of empty seats this year. And Crawford just said that, you know, they're just used to that full, bustling house, and then everybody, you know, the energy is just incredible. And they when they go on the road, he felt that helped them. So, I mean, when you sell out every game and you watch how much fun and people are having out there, they're all dressed up in their panda hats or giraffes or heaven knows what. That's an incredible thing. We're in an amazing time right now to think that every single night, even a Tuesday night against the Pirates, sold out. It's crazy. I mean, that's really a remarkable thing.
What do you think, Mark Purdy, what kind of a role did 5 days off play in this, if a role at all? I mean, Detroit had a longer rest than perhaps is natural.
Good question. You know, they will deny it played any role. And you know, just Jim Leyland said, and I think he is a classy guy, you know, said, look, you can't make any excuses about anything. The Giants just beat us. But, you know, the Tigers had not lost a postseason game here in Detroit until the last two games here. So they were, and I had been here the first round. Bruce was here, too, for those two games when the Tigers beat the A's the first two games of the first round. And, you know, the crowd was into it, and it was, you know, I like this ballpark here. I think the fans here are really good. But something happened, clearly, to the Tigers when they were waiting around. I don't know if it threw out there. I mean, I thought it would, as you so deftly reminded me that I picked the Tigers. I thought it would allow the Tigers to set up the pitching rotation exactly the way they wanted, and they could throw the team. You know, they could allow any guys with nicks and dings to get healthy, and I thought they would just come into the series ready to go. As it turned out, this happens sometimes. You know, the Giants were having to keep playing, and I mean, think about this. A week ago tonight was Game 7 of the Cardinals series, right? And we didn't know if the Giants would even advance a week ago, as we're talking right now. And so, you know, they were just kind of on this pace of, okay, we're playing every other day or every day, and didn't maybe have time to overthink it and let's just go. Whereas the Tigers, maybe sitting around for 5 days, just got them thinking too much. Maybe they needed to be like Tim Lincecum, just come right out of the bullpen and not have to worry about thinking about stuff. It's a crazy game, and we're all experts afterward. You know, beforehand, I was totally wrong about what would happen. I think maybe something did happen during those 5 days
Well, Miguel Cabrera said we couldn't find our game. That kind of says it more
succinctly.
Well,
but, you know, those guys are professionals. They're supposed to be able to show up, you know, a week from Friday and be able to play baseball. I think what he meant was that, you know, the Giants pitched a lot better, and they never got a beat on what the Giants were doing to him pitching-wise. So give credit to the Giants advanced scouts for giving – I asked late last night, I asked in the locker room, I asked Buster Posey about, you know, the scouting reports he was given. He said they just held up perfectly. You know, he's calling the pitches. And, you know, he did a great job, you know, kind of adjusting on the fly. But, you know, they had a three-man scouting team going, you know, looking at the Tigers or you know, all the American League teams, but, you know, ended up being the Tigers. And that scouting report they handed Bochy and Posey. So it's a whole organizational victory.
Yeah, you can't say enough about that battery either, Bruce Jenkins. I mean, Posey behind the plate calling and, well, whoever was on the mound. I mean, it was also very smart of Bochy. We're talking about how what a genius he was to start with left-handers because Detroit didn't have much of a record against left-hand. I mean, not anything compared to the way they were banging out right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, and I think Bochy did a really smart thing in just going with Posey behind the plate every night. You know, as the season developed, Posey would play first base, and Hector Sanchez would catch Barry Zito just to give Posey a little break. And then it developed that Posey and Lincecum didn't really connect on the field, and next thing you know, Posey's not catching him either. And, you know, when you've got your MVP, you're going into the postseason, and this guy doesn't catch, you know, two guys in the rotation, there's something wrong there, and they fixed it just instantly. They didn't even, you know, practice it in the last 2 weeks. All of a sudden, boom, they just corrected that because it just wasn't right. It didn't make sense, and it had effects all over the field, including, you know, keeping Brandon Belt at first base instead of sticking Posey there, and then Belt's in left field, and your defense maybe falls apart.
And speaking of fixing and correcting, I can't get over the fact of the work again that Dave Righetti did, particularly with Baumgartner.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that was a mechanical thing that they worked on behind the scenes. And it really made all the difference. You know, people were wondering, you know, what the heck's happened to this guy? Is there something wrong with him that we don't realize? I mean, it sounds like sort of a cop-out. Well, it's the mechanics and this and that. But they really did fix him on the fly. It was a relatively simple thing. The rotation of his body is before his delivery. And he came out and pitched a great game. I mean, Righetti he does that as a matter of course all season. I mean, this guy is one of the most underrated coaches in all of baseball and really has a manager's mind. And, you know, as long as the Giants can hang on to him, they're very lucky.
Well, I'm going to open the phone lines and also invite those of you who are listening to join us. Are you exulting? How are you feeling in the wake of this World Series victory? It's certainly historic. It was a sweep of the Detroit Tigers. There is, and I want to talk with Marty Lurie about this in a minute, of course, a downside to this in the celebrating. There was some violence, fires, and overturned cars and so forth. Let's talk about really the reaction that you have to the Giants' victory and an opportunity for you to talk about that on the air with us and join this conversation. Our toll-free number is available to you, and that's beyond the borders of the Bay Area as well. If you'd like to join us, if you're listening to us on Sirius or on the internet, 866-733-6786 is the number to call, and we do welcome your calls. So let us know how you feel in the wake of this historic victory, second in 3 years. 866-733-6786. Giants World Champions 2012. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And, Marty Lurie, what are your reactions to sort of the darker side of this, the celebrations that get into the ugly stuff?
Well, spending 25 years as a criminal trial defense lawyer, I'm not surprised. Anytime you get a celebration like this and you get people, it's sort of some give it sort of a free rein to act out. But on the whole, 98% of the people, you saw them at Civic Center. I was downtown at Union Square last night. You heard a lot of horns beeping and things like that. But you will find situations like that in an urban environment where people will take that opportunity to do things and, you know, they're not going to get caught, so to speak. And it's a little bit of the mob mentality. But on the whole, I thought it was pretty good last night, and of course, looking forward to the parade on Wednesday at 11 a.m., there could be a million people again coming into San Francisco for that parade. And last time it was so well-behaved and well-mannered. This ball club has a love affair with the Bay Area, with the community, and this is what happens when a team wins and why the community supports it. And everyone was behind it. It's another good story. So unfortunate that a few got out of hand, but I think on the whole they did pretty well.
But I remember how it was in Detroit, though, when they won the World Series.
Well, and that's, again, an urban city with a lot of issues and a lot of problems. And unfortunately, you look at Detroit and what's happened to that city over the last 20 years or so, and you see the beautiful ballpark and everything around it is decaying. San Francisco's a little different, and we have a lot to be proud of here. But anytime you get a mob together, things are going to happen.
It's almost, you know, a kind of little bleeding heart wanting Detroit because they've been so down and everything. They were so happy for winning the pennant that, I mean, not to say that I ever went off the reservation, you know, with a competitive team, but maybe even just to win that one game or to come out of that one game. But the sweep was in the cards. And we've become, Bruce Jenkins, according to you now, a baseball town, San Francisco.
Well, no, we've been a baseball town since 1903.
I'm sorry, the baseball town.
Yeah, well, no, I wouldn't say we're the baseball town, but it bothers me a little bit when people claim that, you know, these last 3 years have turned the city into a baseball town. Certainly, the downtown ballpark, you know, is a revelation and one of the great sporting venues in the country. But I mean, San Francisco baseball, when you talk about the old Pacific Coast League and such great names as Joe DiMaggio and Tony Lazzari, Lefty O'Doul, I mean, it's just absolutely glittering with history that has been cherished by San Franciscans for years. So, I mean, they didn't go to Candlestick Park. We didn't have Major League Baseball until 1958, but it's been a baseball town since way, way back.
Yeah, all you need to be confirmed that is go to Double Play near our station
here. Exactly, where I would go. Yeah.
What do you think about the signings for next year, Bruce? You wrote a column about that. Most of these players who are free agents or who are possibly going to be re-signed up, are we looking at the likelihood that they will be?
Well, that's a really interesting question always. You know, there's a point where a potential free agent, the euphoria of the world championship wears off. He's looking at the free agent market and a chance to make more money. And that's kind of a bottom line prospect for most athletes. I think in the case of Angel Pagan, you've got a guy who was sort of a lost soul in New York, was run out of town there really with a lot of skepticism about his work ethic and everything else. He was sort of a reckless ball player. All of a sudden he comes to San Francisco, becomes more mature, his leadoff hitter on a world championship team. I mean, does he really want to put himself out there and drift into another bizarre situation? I would not understand it if he did that. And I feel the same way about Marco Scudero, who is a national name now thanks to his time with the Giants. Obviously, a lot of teams would say, geez, this guy would really fit in with us somewhere. I mean, the Yankees are talking about him just to back up Jeter and Robinson Cano. I mean, but where else is he going to find the sheer bliss that he experienced in San Francisco? I don't know. Maybe it's a Pollyanna attitude, but I really think that they'll both be back, and I think it would benefit the organization greatly if they were.
And we're coming up on a break here. Mark Pretty, want to get a word in on this?
Well, you know, in the Bruce states it right. During the euphoria and bliss of all this, you know, it's easy to kind of believe that these guys want to stay here. But after the parade, they'll sit down with their agents. The agents will explain to them the options. It's a business. And I would think, my opinion is, Bruce is right about Scudero. I think he really fit into this clubhouse well. Pagan is a little different character. I'm not sure about him. But, you know, we'll see. I think everyone, this is the crazy thing to me about American sports. A minute after somebody wins a championship, everybody talks about, but who's coming back next year? They should enjoy this for a few days.
Well, let's all enjoy it for a few days, and we'll hear from you, our listeners. We'll bring you into the conversation again. You can call us toll-free, 866-733-6786. Let us know what you think in the wake of the victory, the four-game sweep by the Giants over the Tigers. Talking with Bruce Jenkins, Marty Lurie, and Mark Purdy, and we'll hear from you when we return. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The San Francisco Giants are the World Series champions, sweeping the Detroit Tigers with a 4-3 victory in extra innings on Sunday night. What was your favorite moment of the team's stunning postseason, and how do you feel in the aftermath of this, well, extraordinary victory, magical victory? Think about your adjectives here, because those seem almost wanting when we think about this season and all the triumphs and narratives that are involved. With us in studio, Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host with KNBR 680, and with us by phone, Bruce Jenkins, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, who is in Detroit, and Mark Purdy, sports columnist with the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group, also with us from Detroit. And with us are a number of our listeners emailing us just to give us a flavor about the 5 days off question. Lee writes, if the Tigers had won, we would be saying that those 5 days off were to their advantage. But they didn't win. They lost. Why? Because the Giants are all about the team rather than lionizing individual egos and trophies like fielders and Verlanders. How many times did we hear a Giant player say he was playing for the next guy? That's what they did, and they proved that it's not just PC kumbaya. It works. Another listener says, exulting, my son and daughter-in-law are considering naming their expected daughter Posey. Only downside, the Fox broadcast last night, horrible. Focus on the game, not stupid interviews. All right, Marty, I'm sorry, I got to go in this with you because you guys do such a terrific job. Admittedly, I'm watching a little bit of television, and they're doing interviews with, I don't know, some taco guy. Somebody says, maybe you should talk about his high school days. I mean, it was just ridiculous. It was ludicrous.
It's not geared to the baseball fan. They're trying to do an entertainment program as well, and that's Fox, the way they look at it. They have two broadcasters on the national level. They don't do their homework about the teams. I don't know why they don't go back to the three-man booth and bring in one broadcaster from the home team to give the flavor of what is going on. But the Fox is, they're out there, they're trying to create entertainment, and that's why they do these long interviews and go all over the place. They don't trust baseball, that they could just sell the baseball game. They need to do other things,
too. Is it also, you think, the fact that we didn't have any East Coast teams? There is a kind of East Coast-centric attitude about baseball.
Well, I think they needed the story. You see, in a seven-game series, it takes two or three games to get the story going. Well, the story became the Tigers not hitting and the Giants playing good old country hardball and beating them. And they didn't have the drama of the story. And Joe Buck kept saying, well, maybe tonight the Tigers will win and extend this thing. So they lost the baseball storyline. They didn't have the drama that they wanted in those ultimate games. So they had to resort to the Fox trickery, as I like to call it.
Another listener writes, it seems like nobody in the media wants to talk about the damage done to San Francisco last night. And one night, it looks like Giants fans caused more destruction, lit more fires, and threw more bottles at cops than we saw in the entire year of Occupy in both San Francisco and Oakland. These fans terrorized a bus full of citizens, smashed it up, and set it on fire. Why is everybody glossing over this? If these vandals were wearing just black instead of black and orange, the headlines would be talking about domestic terrorism. Bruce Jenkins or Mark Purdy, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, I mean, it's hard to weigh in on that from here, but like Marty said, this is a common development in urban settings in the wake of a great sports triumph. It's a little bit baffling to most of us, I think, but you know, alcohol is a powerful influence, and you know, with the motivation behind it is a little bit odd, but these are things that happen. I mean, and it's horrible. I mean, how do you correct it? I'm not sure. Go ahead, Mark.
No, well, you know, the listener said these were fans that were doing this. I don't think they were fans. I think they were people looking for an excuse to open up. Just like, you know, when the Occupy stuff happens, I think a lot of the most sincere Occupy protesters aren't the ones that do the damage. It's the ones who kind of glom onto it and are looking for reason to create trouble. If it weren't for baseball, they would have waited for something else to open the door for them to do this stuff. I am loath to comment on it from here back in Detroit. I don't know, and I don't know, but I would hope that the law enforcement authorities back there kind of anticipated this and were on top of it. Sometimes I wonder why that doesn't happen more. I mean, I love our policemen and all that, but you know, somebody should have seen this coming. And
no,
they were
ready and prepared. The problem was it got out of hand, and there was a lot of destruction.
Well, there probably would have been a lot more if they weren't ready. You know, it is crazy to me. I don't understand that mindset. It isn't a part of my life. It's not a part of people I know. But there are just people out there waiting for an excuse to do something, and this gives them the opening. And I hope they all go to jail and sit there and have to watch Fox broadcasts of everything for a long time.
Well, let me give some website and tweets here before we go to your calls. Debbie tweets, my most memorable experience of the postseason, celebrating a team win last night in front of an Orange City Hall with 9,999 other crazy Giants fans. And Zach tweets, had the edge of that massive Northeastern not been blowing, Detroit might not have had two home runs. They got the score at all last night. And some website comments. This listener writes, it's appalling that the National East Coast writers, who had a chance to see the Giants' excellent pitching and defense, still picked against them with the terrible defense of the Tigers. They saw the Giants' pitching come around to propel them through two different series where they were down and needed to win three in a row. The Tigers' pitching was vaunted, but their D was admonished. Wendy writes, Sergio Romo is an orange leprechaun with a Lucky Charms twinkle in his eyes who definitely managed to find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Let's go to your calls. And Scott, we begin with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for doing the show and for Marty and Bruce coming on. I think for me, the moment of the thing was Zito's bunt in Game 5 against the Cardinals, because it was like he was already pitching great, which was an incredible turnaround for things, but then that bunt just seemed like it was, totally magical. And really that it was a team thing. It was like on any given night, somebody different was turning on at precisely the moment they needed to. And then I think overall, in terms of the impact on the city, was they had this wonderful kind of straight man comedy guy thing going on with like Kane and Posey being like the ultimate gentleman and very conservative and sort of just letting the results speak for them rather than being verbose. And then they have these really great clowns like Wilson and Romo who just set up this kind of dynamic that almost reminded me of like that theme song from that old show, The Monkees. It's like we're too busy playing to put anybody down, and so the quality of it was so clean, and to be so dominant at the same time is just a great reflection. And hopefully, in the context of what we've just been talking about with the violence and things, hopefully it becomes a beacon for the fans to be able to, try to live up to that same standard where they're having the most fun and they're also the most respectful and gentlemanly, so everybody gets inspired even while we're, enjoying the win.
That's well said, Scott, and we thank you for the call. How much, though, when it really comes down to crunch here, Marty Lurie, everybody's saying defense and pitching, you're talking about Scudero's clutch hitting, but the sort of almost elusive and ineffable glue that keeps a team together and makes the team want to win.
Well, I think that's part of it, but it comes down to pitching and why the Tigers were favored. They had this great pitcher starting off for them. The Giants went through a tough 7-game series with the Cardinals. Their pitching was not set up. So when all the analysts look at it, they look at Verlander getting maybe 3 starts and these other pitchers getting part of it. But you do get this, and Bruce alluded to with Hunter Pence, there is always that little self-doubt in life and in sports. And Hunter Pence kind of took that self-doubt away from the team and gave them the belief they could do it. I think it was huge coming back against the Reds down 0-2 to win those 3 games, down 3-1 to the Cardinals to win those 3 games. This ball club really didn't click in until about 9 games into the playoffs, and they won the last 7. And if they would have done this from day 1 of the playoffs, they'd be considered the greatest team ever. But it took a little while for the pitching and the defense and the hitting to click in. And once it clicked in, the National League showed it was just a better team, a better league in a short series with pitching, defense, speed, and those exceptional plays by the bullpen of getting big outs when they needed them.
Yeah, I couldn't help thinking that on the one hand, an American League pitcher like Verlander, who was vaunted as perhaps the best pitcher in the league, was facing hitters he wasn't used to, and they were facing a pitcher that they could get to, whereas on the other hand, you had pitchers on the Giants who they didn't quite know what to make of Lincecum, for example, or Romo, for that matter, and Giants pitchers coming through in ways that would not necessarily have been anticipated. I'm not only talking about Lincecum, I'm talking about, obviously, Barry Zito, who, would just perform marvelously, and Baumgartner.
Well, and I think the point that Bruce made and Mark made about Rigetti, Baumgartner needed a week off. Matt Cain has thrown close to 250 innings this year. Baumgartner had over 200 innings coming into the playoffs. And sometimes you give someone a week off, they think they're better. and they think things are going to be better. And I think that worked for Bumgarner. I think it was just another stroke of genius by the coaching staff to give him that week off. But you look at the way this ball club played as a baseball team. Brandon Crawford, you talk about people's profiles being elevated in the national scene. Brandon Crawford at shortstop now made great plays last night. The ball that went off the pitcher, he had the reverse directions, barehanded it and made a throw. Belt at first base, a tremendous scoop on a throw by Sandoval. All the elements of country hardball, and I say this again, they're men playing hardball at its highest level under the biggest microscope in the world, and the Giants just played better baseball and beat the Tigers. And I think the layoff hurt the Tigers, as Mark said. I think there was some rust there for them.
We'll go to more of your calls, and we'll go to Oakland and welcome Lori. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for this great show, Michael. And I have to start with a quick shout-out to Marty Lori, who has taken us through this whole season. Every show has been extraordinary. The man is a walking baseball encyclopedia and also the most gracious host on radio. I was there last night with my friends, a friend who drove up from L.A. to watch the game at the Public House, and we were so thrilled. We're still in shock that this Giants team did such an extraordinary thing and pulled this together. We were there at the losses at the NLDS games where we were just crying in our beer afterwards, and to be there last night with this win was amazing. However, we're extremely saddened by people wearing San Francisco Giants t-shirts and caps and everything, throwing huge bottles, black glass bottles in the middle of 3rd and King Street, hitting us, hitting kids with huge pieces of glass that were flying everywhere, setting fires, all the while surrounded by San Francisco police in riot gear, not doing a thing, standing there with their hands in their pockets. And it was really just an awful scene, and it really... We just were so upset by this whole thing.
I think a lot of people are upset, and thanks for giving us that unfortunate eyewitness account of what's. I mean, in the wake of all this excitement and exultation, that does cast a very dark side of it. There's no getting around it. I want to get to some more of your calls and emails, though. And here I thought I was the most gracious host on radio.
Me too.
There's no competition.
I want you to host a show with me. I'm waiting, you know, and I love having Mark on and Bruce all weekend long. We talk baseball. And before we, Bruce, the Sandy Amoros catch, and Michael, you could appreciate one of the great catches of World Series history, Sandy Amoros, 1955 for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
I've got an email about it, Marty. Call him Sandy Alomar in this flashback. I was too young to see it live, but have many times seen the replay of Sandy Alomar's. Amoros. Famous catch of Yogi Berra's fly to left field. I thought I was seeing ghosts when Gregor Blanco caught that foul fly.
Oh, it was great. I loved it. And I had seen it, and I have my Twitter, you know, at Baseball Marty, and I tweeted it out. And 3 minutes later, Bruce Jenkins sent me an email saying two words, Sandy Amoros. So we were on the same
way. When I saw that, I was writing on my computer screen, but I just had to tell somebody that was Sandy Amoros, and of course I went straight to Marty.
You knew the go-to guy. You know, this listener, Paul, in his email also says probably wouldn't have happened if either of them hadn't been southpaws.
That's correct.
No, you have to be a left-handed player with the right glove outstretched. Otherwise, it bears no resemblance to Sandy Amoros.
And then Neil writes, I'm a born and raised Detroit native that has moved to San Francisco 2 years ago. I was definitely rooting for Detroit. However, a true Detroit sports fan will be the first to extend a high five to congratulate the nearest Giants fan. Now, that's gracious. And a listener tweets, expensive tickets, West Coast Yankees, half the people at AT&T Park are there to Instagram. Whoa. Anybody? Well, Mark Ferdy, let's go to you on this one.
You just can't make everybody happy, can you? I think grumps are always going to be grumps. You know, baseball, this whole thing, look, it should be a break from, you know, what everybody has to go through in their real lives, the day-to-day stuff. No one says that guy has to go to the ballpark, right? I mean, you know, he can go be grumpy off in the corner. I think everyone, even if you weren't a Giants fan, if you watched this series and really the whole playoffs, and let's not leave the A's out either. I mean, this was a pretty cool month in the Bay Area, just to watch the you know, this all unfold and see. It was vastly entertaining, and very gripping. And it's like now we were on this train going a million miles an hour and we fell off. And now what, right? It was just terrific. But it all started. It probably all started that last week of the season when the A's came and clinched that thing against Texas, which was about maybe October 1st. So what is it, October 28th? So these have been pretty amazing 27, 28 days. And not everybody at the ballpark is texting.
Well, I think you said it well in your column this morning, Mark. You were talking about how surreal and unbelievable this has been. In many ways, you know, it's sort of like wake us when it's over, and now it's over, and hey, we're sorry it's over in some ways.
We have this radio show to go over it, so let's do that, huh?
This is
interesting how people, you know, you had everything there last night, right? All these people celebrating and these crazy people. I don't know. It's one reason I write about sports is you never know from day to day what you're going to see, and it is part of American society as well as being sports and entertainment.
Well, talking about fan reaction, and this is what Marty Lurie, with his inviolable memory about baseball, will recall this. Peggy writes on our Facebook page, regarding fan reaction in urban areas, may I remind your guests and listeners that there were no ugly incidents in Chicago when the White Sox won the World Series for the first time in 88 years in 2005.
Well, that's commendable for Chicago.
I was going to say Chicago. Right?
Commendable for Chicago.
It's not required. You have to.
No,
right.
It's not a prerequisite.
It really
I think people
is.
Were in shock. They couldn't believe it actually
really
happened.
It didn't happen in Wrigley Field, though. I'll tell you that.
No.
No, I always, as many of you may remember, Larry Stone, who used to write for the Examiner, he had a book about baseball trivia, and there was a line in there about a guy who was buried across from Wrigley Field, and a tombstone actually was in Yiddish, translated to the Cubs stink. He took it to the grave. He literally took it to the grave. Let me get Kaz on here. Kaz, welcome.
Hi, Michael. First of all, I really want to acknowledge you for having the best panel in the world for this show today. I mean, these guys are all stars, and there is no place that any Giants fan should be tuning in except to this program right now to hear this.
Well, let's give a particular prop to Dan Zoll, who our senior editor, who put this together on short notice. I said, Dan, if they sweep, we've got to dump out of whatever we're doing, and we've done that.
Anyway, you know, this is such an amazing game, and the thing that makes it so amazing is that it's about what team gets hot when and how they get hot. And watching the Giants do that at the last, what I would call the last minute, was absolutely amazing. And when that happens, it changes everything. And what I'm reminded of is this program that on Marty's program a couple of weeks ago, the topic came up of should they trade Sandoval? Because Sandoval, before he reached the heights of all heights here, you know, an MVP, was up and down. And he wasn't doing well, and Marty.
They were talking, about the weights of all weights, for the most part.
Yeah, weights of all weights and everything else. So now, I mean, you look at it and you think, is that topic, Marty, totally off the table now? Would it have to be?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what you saw with Sandoval is he's an amazing hitter, great hand-eye coordination, and I think the honeymoon goes on. And as Mark and Bruce talked earlier, the 2010 team had a lot of age in it, and they re-signed everyone. They were so excited, they re-signed everybody right away. This is a relatively young team, and there will be a few fringe players leaving, but I think you're looking at a team, and I said it in 2010, I think this is just the beginning of about a 5 or 7 year cycle of great pitching and good young talent coming in, and Sandoval is part of it. I think he has to rededicate himself this winter to getting in shape, but you cannot deny his ability of hitting a ball out of the park and just being one of those old Yogi Berra, I'll hit it wherever it's pitched kind of guys, and nothing bothers him. And he came through on the biggest stage and the biggest moment of his career, and I think he's here.
I wonder about let's talk about pitching for a moment, Bruce Jenkins. Is Kane still the ace of this squad? I mean, in terms of his postseason pitching, I mean, he did have a perfect game. He had a great season, admittedly. But I was thinking last night, he does throw gopher balls, as we used to call them. I mean, there were two last night.
Yeah, sort of like Catfish Hunter. He gave up a gopher ball along the way. But, no, I think he is. He was the guy who clinched the previous two series. He was on the mound. I just think, and the way the Giants view it, and probably the way the fans view it, if you've got a Game 7 or who's pitching opening day, it's just got to be Kane. You know, Bumgarner, we've seen him wear down a little bit. Zito, he's a story in himself. He's certainly not the ace, but he sure is a story. Lincecum wound up in relief. And, you know, Vogelsong was really, you talk about somebody who's in the running for most valuable player on the team. Astounding performance. Really one of the great sustained postseason performances since Earl Hershiser.
Well, know, and so. You see him on the mound, that look of competition on his face. Is that the chicken enchiladas that does that?
You know, it's wonderful, whatever it is.
But you know what it is, Bruce and Mark? It's the Dave Stewart look. You know, he's got that look on, without pulling the hat down over his eyes. He's got that look in his eyes on the mound.
And you can't fake a look like that. I mean, that's for real. And he's absolutely sensational. But I still think it comes down to Kane.
Yeah, you know, I think Kane, and I said this on the show, I think, last week, Kane and Posey are kind of the gravitational centers of that clubhouse in a lot of ways. And so, you know, he's the guy, the other players look to. You know, Lincecum has won the Cy Youngs, and he's a very interesting character and a deeper thinker than people realize, and maybe that gets him in trouble. But the rock is Kane, and always will be the Kane. And if we're talking about pitching, let's not forget the bullpen. That was pretty remarkable. And talking to Rigetti last night, he told me something that I want to write about in the paper, but I'll tell you about it here, that he thought a big thing was in September when they decided, I think they brought up a bunch of pitchers from the minor leagues, you know, what you can do in September, and they had like 17 guys in the pitch staff. And they did that because they wanted to, whenever possible, rest the bullpen arms to get them ready for October. By then, the Dodgers, they kind of knew they were going to beat the Dodgers. And I want to go back in those box scores and look and see. You know, Dave said, you know, every game that we were close, we wanted to, you know, use the real, you know, have our real bullpen guys in. But once, if a game was out of hand, none of those guys saw any action. It was all the guys they brought up. And he thought that allowed the bullpen arms to be fresh for October, which shows you, this goes, you know, it isn't just that they show up and are hot. There's a method and there's a plan, and that plan, part of the plan, worked out great.
And we bring more of our callers in. Wynn, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Thank you. There were so many wonderful moments, but I remember a little moment. I think it was the second game where the score was nothing-nothing in the seventh inning, and Pence got a single, and then Belt hit one down to first base. Fielder fielded it, touched the base, and threw to second for a double play, and it was a foul ball. It turned out that Belt walked, and they loaded the bases and scored a run on the double play. The fielder had a chance to move in and catch that ball in fair territory. He waited for the ball to get to him, and because of that, Belt was able to stay, and there was no double play, and they got a run. And that's kind of the way they played all season, especially at the end. All the little things, they made the breaks, and the other teams didn't.
Yeah, including a ball that hit the plate. I mean, it hit third base. I mean, there are all kinds of sort
of funky
things. How about
Blanco's
like
bunt?
And Blanco's bunt,
come on,
exactly,
you couldn't have placed it any better, and they get the winning run on a double play.
Let's look at an email here from Sheila, who says, best team ever. They truly are a team, and I do agree with you on the outstanding Bruce Bochy. Maybe this country could learn something from watching the behavior of this magnificent team. The pitching and outstanding defense were a joy to watch. I'm a former New Yorker, a diehard Yankee fan, and still I remember the Bobby Thompson home run that wrecked the Dodgers back in the early 50s. San Francisco Giants are still carrying that magic, and maybe the country, she says, could learn something from the behavior of the Giants. And we'll learn something more from our listeners, no doubt. We go to Randy. Randy, welcome.
Yeah, real quick, just I'd like to know what your baseball gurus think about the fact of the foreign players and all the Venezuelan guys, both on the Detroit and on the Giants, and the upcoming World Baseball Classic. I think they'll all be playing together, the Venezuelans, at AT&T Park.
Yeah. In fact, Bruce Jenkins, supposedly Hugo Chavez tweeted Sandoval, though we don't know necessarily the veracity of that. What about, you want to speculate on that?
I hope they're all there. I mean, this was a great gathering and a real positive identification of what Venezuelan baseball has done for the major leagues. It's a longstanding tradition. I did some research and came up with the all-Venezuelan team from all time, and it's a really, really impressive group. And they're crazy about the game down there. I think if they all play for the national team, you've got a real contender for that World Baseball Classic.
Another listener writes, please say something about Zito. It's amazing to me that the starting pitcher of the World Series, a guy that can't throw faster than 85 miles an hour.
Well,
One of the callers said that her favorite moment was Zito's bunt, and for me, it was Zito at the plate, period. I mean, this is a guy, he's right-handed. The only thing he does with his left hand is pitch. Everything else is right-handed. But he stands up there left-handed to hit, and you could watch him hit for 10 years, and he would never put a ball to the right side. He's just he's hopeless and weak, and he's hitting all these horrible things to the left side of the infield. But he's a pretty good bunter. He got that bunt down that changed everything. And then he stung a single to left off Verlander. And, I mean, it's just like, that just can't happen. And now I can't wait to see Zito come back and hit some more. I want to watch him hit for a week.
I think he's going to put on a hitting clinic for little leaguers.
Don't get carried away, Bruce.
Darcy writes, thanks for extending the joy many of us have been feeling since the Giants slowly eased into first place. It's been a total escape for all the stress and mind stuff we carry around with us. Going to AT&T Park exemplifies that. For a moment in time, the city around us does not exist, and we all celebrate or are disappointed as one. And it says it nicely, and let's continue to, of course, feel all the joy of this, in spite of the fact that there has been, as we've acknowledged here and conceded, a darker side to it, unfortunately. Any speculation about next year, Marty Lurie?
Well, I think they're back. I think you're looking at a young team that's maturing. I don't think we've seen the best of Brandon Belt.
Crawford, yeah.
He's a Gold Glove shortstop. Sandoval certainly be back. Posey, MVP to be, batting title. I hope Pagan comes back. I think, as Bruce said and Mark said, he fits into this ballpark. And look, there's 42,000 out here every night, and they can win again. And the players like to win, and the Giants are making a lot of money. If you go to that dugout store, the printing press is printing money right in there. So they've got, they shouldn't nickel and dime the players. If it's a question of $8 million or $10 million, pay the guy and bring him back. He's young enough where he can do it. As Bruce said, Pence will come back as well. Pitching staff is pretty much intact. So I think they're back, and I think this is, again, maybe the third year, fourth year out of five or six that they should be right in the middle of it.
I won't even ask Purdy what he thinks about next year. No, actually,
I'm still picking the Tigers.
Yeah, well, congratulations to the Giants, to Bruce Bochy, to Brian Sabian, to Larry Barrett, to the whole organization, and to you, all the fans. That includes me, Michael Krasny. Thank you to Bruce Jenkins, to Marty Lurie, to Mark Purdy, and thank you to our staff for all of us at KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.